Good morning.
Good morning.
My partner in crime today is also Dr. Davila with me. And let's see if we can just start. Also, we have no relationships to disclose. The purpose of this is to educate you, of course, in their learning objectives, just to discuss the fundamental process, the principles of the socio-ecological model, and identify factors from that model that influence the health of older adults, and to use this socio-ecological perspective to identify points of intervention to enhance the health of older adults. Let me just ask a question. How many of you are baby boomers? How many baby boomers? Right, okay. And for those that you are not, you still have a part in this presentation, because if you are older, for the sake of this presentation, we're talking about 65 or older. Even older is 85 and above. So if you're in that group, it affects you. And if you're younger, it still will affect you. Today, we really do look at 40.4 million of the total population, but because of us baby boomers and technology that keeps us alive a lot longer, our longevity, by 2050, we're looking at 88.5 million. That's one in eight, every person of the total population. They'll be more racially and ethnically diverse. Right now, or in 2008, there was 81% white. 2050, we're looking at 74% white. And we know now that at least 80% have at least one chronic illness. So you can see where we're going. The model that we have chosen is the socio-ecological model. It's a four-level model, and it really helps us understand the health of older adults. There's the individual level, which you can see is the biological and the personal factors that affect us. Then we have the relationship level, those relationships that are close to us that enhance or can impede our health. We have the community setting, where our social relationships occur. And then the societal level, where those socio-cultural norms and all the public health policies come into play. What we like about this model is that it really does show the multidimensional aspect of bringing all these into play. Whoops, we skipped one. When we talk about the individual level, basically we're talking about our genetics, our age, the ethnicity, income, food insecurity. These are some of the basic ones. Transportation, depression, substance abuse. Think for a minute about income. Right now, 9% live at or below the poverty level. And 31% consider economically secure. I start thinking, oh my gosh, that's going to be me one day. But when we talk about income, basically we're looking at is a lack of income to support their basic needs. Sound familiar to anybody out there when they talk about family members? And think of how much money that takes out of their income for health care, which we all know is a huge percent. Food insecurity. You wouldn't think about food insecurity in a country like America, would you? But they know now that we've got studies that show because of this, a lot of our seniors are lacking in the true nutrients that they need, because what are they doing? They can't spend money on health if they don't have the medication. So I've also put on this slide about, for sake of time, think of pharmaceuticals. We always hear about people being non-compliant. I hate the word non-compliant. Maybe they're not compliant because of a reason. Maybe they're having to split their pills in half to make it last because of that income insecurity. Or they'll just stop it. Look at the education that's needed out there for us as nurses to help patients understanding why it's important not to stop a medication. Or they don't want a new prescription. They don't get them filled. So when the doctor asks them, did you take your medication? They say, no, we write down non-compliant. When we look at assessing these people, think about transportation. Think how important it is if you couldn't drive yourself here today. Well, probably you didn't drive yourself here today, but when we think about getting around, have their independence and the self-esteem knowing that you can get yourself to where you want to go. But what about them when they can't? And do we assess them? Should they be driving? Have they had their eyeglasses checked? Those kind of things. How do they get around? But their independence is so critical, and transportation is major. And on the same slide, we put depression. You see how it starts to tie in? We already know that once they have one illness, the chances for depression increases because of that impairment. And look at the range, 1 to 5% among community dwelling older adults. Some already require home health care, or they're inpatients. And then look at the 5 million with subclinical depression. So what we do here for point of intervention, perhaps they need a psych eval. We have to stop and think about that. Substance abuse, that's something else people don't think about for the elderly. But look how many people abuse alcohol and substances, even, you know, not just alcohol, but legal drugs. But that's a lot. So if we only have 4% now that receive education and counseling on treatment for alcohol and substance abuse, what's it going to be like in 2050? We're going to leave a lot more mental health nurses, aren't we? So what can we do? I'll tell you in a minute. Health literacy. Never did I think about health literacy in the elder person. But remember, as they age, have they had their eyes checked? Can they read? How fast is the person going? If it's small print, how many of you have to have glasses to read the small print? Have you ever tried to read the back of a prescription bottle? I mean, you know, like on aspirin where it says, have you ever tried? Well, you know, if you don't have the glasses, you can't read it. So these are just some clues that we as nurses can look for assessing them, is when they do hold it upside down and you realize they're not reading it at all, or they tell you they forgot their glasses, or they really did lose them, or they'll tell you they'll read it later. What can we do? What can we as nurses do? One thing, we can use more pictures. You know how we have the labels and we can put pictures instead of the fine print. Then we go to the relationship level. How important? Social support, the marital status of the person or the caregiver status, and then elder abuse. Social support just means the real, when you think about it, or the perceived resources provided by others. That makes the person, whether or not they know, whether they may think that's their best friend that's helping, and that person may feel burdened. But there's such a network of communication and mutual obligation that it's so important to this person. And we also know that the more they have the social support, there's less physical illness, mental illness, and mortality. That makes sense. So when we talk about marital status, if they're married, and who does the patient live with? Is it alone? Is it a nursing home, assisted living? Is it a rehab center? And when we talk about caregivers, anybody a caregiver? Think about the role of the caregiver. And what level of involvement do they have? And what about the loss of, when they talk a loss of independence? It's not just the independence of the patient or the elderly. How about the caregiver? Elder abuse, just so you remember, it always, always must be reported, even if just to suspect it, does not have to be proven, and it includes all kinds. I think everybody's seen in the news, we always read about financial abuse, but think of the other abuse. We know about the psychological abuse, but there's also physical, and well, I said the financial, but the neglect. Maybe not getting their glasses fixed. Maybe you don't have time to take them to have them their glasses fixed. Or what about domestic violence? Does that happen in elderlies? So what can we do? These are basic questions that nurses can ask. Make home visits. Check on these patients. One of the points of interventions, you actually go out like we used to. Like Dr. Baldwin said back in, 1900 with Lillian Wall? But you have to ask these questions of these people. They're not going to come up and tell you. They're probably afraid. And like we had the depression screen, I said I would tell you later, but the cage. What do we call it? The cage? Yes. Use it. It's easy. It's out there for us. But we have to start looking at the elderly patient, the elderly person, in a whole different way, because they're going to be outnumber us. I'll be one of them. When we look at the community level, think there about the health and social services. Are they out there for them? How about neighborhood crime? What is their neighborhood like? What are their sidewalks like? Can they even walk down the street? Or what if they have bars on the windows because they've been in that house for 40 years and they put bars on the windows, which now we have a fire hazard. Can they walk to where they want to go? What kind of transportation is available for them? Are all neighborhoods so well equipped with public transportation? No. And what about that workforce? Do they know how to deal with culturally, the differences culturally we'll see with these patients? Not all of them are patients. Some of them hopefully are healthy. But when we think about the culturally competent workforce, we have to think if they are looking at people as individuals and where they're coming from and if we're dealing with them in individual manners. One of my favorites, the societal level. I had so much fun finding this on ageism. I just hate that. Are all elders, if this is the way we all are going to look at elders, and then that's going to be all of us one day. And think of the sociocultural norms and values. Think of TV. Just think of the media right now, television. When you think of an old person, how do they portray it on television? If it's not erectile dysfunction, if it's not Depends, if it's not urinary incontinence, but do they ever show that vivacious person that's still skiing, that's still doing the things that people do that when they are in good health? But what are we telling people? Once you're 65 and over, you're out to pasture. That's just not true. It's just not true. So we need the health and public policy. We need those coalitions to stand behind and take care of our elders. We really need to think about this because, folks, we're getting there. These are just the references that we have, thanks to Dr. Davila and her other research. Thank you.